I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast! Theme tune. That's right, buddy. Today we're doing the 2007 remake of Funny Games.
Hilarious.
But before we get to what we're doing, how are you doing?
I'm nervous, babe, because we just had quite a successful episode with Dread.
We did.
Done good numbers, and we thought surely that means it's time to try something totally different that we've never done before.
Yeah,
and go for as a bit of a practice for an upcoming live show.
Yeah,
an unedited episode.
Yeah,
that requires us to nail it first try
with no practice.
With no practice, yeah. And just to really make sure that we know the stakes, we've not left ourselves time to edit it if we need to.
No,
this is live in 2 hours.
It's live in 2 hours, yeah. It's literally, this is going out as it is.
Yay!
Yay!
How about you, buddy?
Shitting it, because we're practicing for an upcoming live show that is happening at a little independent film festival.
Where
here
is
in
it
Telford.
Happening?
It's happening at the Orbit in Wellington.
I knew that.
That's my little independent cinema. I'm responsible for this.
Yeah.
The entire film festival's on me.
Yeah. When is it happening?
July 11th until the 13th.
I knew that
and
too.
And we're performing on the 13th.
Okay.
After the screening of Pride, Prejudice and Zombies.
I definitely knew that as well.
There you go. All right, well.
Pride and Prejudice Zombies, the film?
Yeah.
I've definitely seen that.
Yeah. This is all going to be planned out, mate. Don't worry about it.
We're going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe watch the film first.
Mate, I've seen it once and it's fucking hilarious. We'll figure something out. It'll be fine. But that's happening. Tickets are on sale this week. It's going to be amazing. We'll make a bigger song and dance about it. We'll let you know what the films are. Obviously, you know, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is in there. It's going to be fun. It's going to be stupid. We're working on special guests. We're working on like a VHS treasure hunt around the town.
Mm-hmm.
There's like prizes to be won. There's a quiz that's going to be going on. It's going to be fun as fuck.
Brilliant.
Fun as fuck.
And we're going to put a link to how people can get tickets to that in the bio for this episode. That we can do that, right?
Yeah, tickets on our sale, yeah. But yeah, sure.
Oh, okay.
Retroactively.
Well, this is going great. What are we doing? What are we going to do today, babe? we're nailing this.
Right. We're doing 2007's Funny Games. We're going to be getting into what happens when the antagonists know that they're in a horror movie.
What kind of horror movie watcher are you?
Ooh. Why remake the Funny Games only 10 years later than the original?
I have lost my notes.
Excellent. That's what we want. And then finally, we're going to be getting into, what's it really mean? What's it really mean, Rob?
What does it really mean?
What does it really mean?
Look, it's a very tense, very difficult to watch movie.
It is.
About, well, tell you what, not everyone's seen this movie and not everyone's planning to. Also, some people have seen it and they've forgotten what's going on. So why don't we recap what's going on in the film?
I'm down
so
for
we
this.
Can talk about it and everyone knows what we're talking about.
I've got it this week, babe.
Right? I've written act titles.
I've written breakdowns. The act titles are meta because the whole film is kind of, it's a bit meta.
Just a bit.
So we're given the spoiler warning. Normally we say, you know, pause the show here, go watch the film and then come back to it. But this is a difficult watch.
Yeah.
And I understand that not everyone is going to get what we got out of this film. And that's fine. That's acceptable.
If you struggle with tension and the threat of violence,
yeah,
maybe skip this one and just enjoy this episode.
Yeah. Also, if you are planning on watching the movie and you haven't seen it, check doesthedogdie.com first.
Yeah.
Just putting that one in there.
And if you've got any Lake House holidays booked, I'd say skip this and the episode.
Skip it until after.
Listen to
it at the Lake House. There you go.
So it starts with Act 1. Act 1. This is the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, good. In the quiet luxury of a lakeside vacation, George, Anna, and their young son, Georgie, arrive at their second home, anticipating a peaceful family weekend. It is quite peaceful because it opens with them trying to pick which classical composer they're listening to. And
exactly. It's very lovely. Cute. It's very lovely.
And it smash cuts to some insane noise punk metal that I actually adore.
Yeah.
Their routine is disrupted when two young men, Peter and Paul, that's their names. I've got a point about why I found this so confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Peter and Paul, they arrive from a neighbouring house under the guise of borrowing eggs. What begins as an awkward politeness quickly turns strange. They're clumsy, invasive, and emotionally void. The tension escalates with small violations of social norms until Paul suddenly attacks George, the dad, breaking his leg with the golf club. In a matter of moments, the home is transformed into a prison, and the family's world begins to crumble.
It's quite a sharp descent from lovely to...
Yeah.
Oh,
but
shit.
It's one of those slow slides through social politeness where 100%. You kind of see the danger, but you also recognize that if you were in that situation, you wouldn't want to be the one to point out that it was weird and invasive. So 100%. You just go along with it.
Yeah.
It's that classic coercive behavior where it outsources the need to call it out onto the victim.
Act two. This is the middle of the movie.
Oh, God. Okay.
Right?
Right. Okay, I see where we go with this. Thanks. Yeah, yeah, nice.
Peter and Paul begin to systematically torment the family with a disturbing blend of polite sadism. They force George and Anna to participate in psychological games, all while maintaining an eerily calm demeanor.
Yeah.
The pair frequently break cinematic conventions. Paul addresses us, the viewer, directly, creating a weird, complicated bond that I'm uncomfortable with, if I'm being honest.
He's disarmingly charming and vulnerable whilst looking you in the eye.
Yes, because he knows exactly what he's doing, the fucking bastard. Georgie, the son, makes a brave attempt to escape, but it ends with his off-screen death, revealed with nothing but a jarring cut to a TV flickering in a cold, blood-splattered room.
Mm.
The violence is stripped of spectacle, emphasis on the emotional trauma over action. Anna and George are left broken, while Peter and Paul remain composed, and their control is now complete.
Act three. This is the end of the movie. Or is it?
Or is it?
Anna manages a fleeting moment of resistance, seizing a shotgun and killing Peter. But in a surreal metafictional turn of events, Paul grabs a remote control and rewinds the movie, literally erasing her victory. It's a blunt, disturbing assertion of the intruders and the director's absolute control. George, the dad, is soon killed, and Anna is taken out on the family's boat with hands and feet tied. After a cold and meaningless exchange, Paul casually pushes her into the lake to drown. Literally mid-sentence.
They don't give a fuck.
Yeah. With no fanfare, they move on, arriving at the neighbor's house and knocking at the door, ready to start the cycle of senseless violence all over. The film ends, but does it really?
It ends the way it begins, the way that it kicks off.
Yes.
It's non-stop cyclical motion of why are we doing this?
It's a psycho eating its own tail.
It's exactly what it
is.
Give me your initial reactions. What
did you think
about this film?
I was really worried about this one, I can't lie, because you and I have different film taste, and you and I have different thresholds on what we consider like
good horror.
It's not even good horror, not even good films. It's interesting.
Okay.
So there are films that you find interesting because of their extremity. That I'm just like, I find it boring.
Right.
And so there's stuff that I've seen the titles of, like Cannibal Holocaust, or I Spit on Your Grave, or Last House on the Left.
Sure.
Or a Serbian movie is a classic one. You don't bring this one to me ever, but people say, have you seen a Serbian movie? And I'm like, no, I have no interest.
No,
it's boring. It's not only is it boring, but it's going to be emotionally and viscerally disturbing to me.
It's very draining.
And I'm going to be drained by it.
Yep.
And what's the point? What's the artistic merit? Mm-hmm. What is it going to make me think about? And is it worth that disturbance?
No.
It's a little bit like when you show sexual violence on screen.
Okay.
I don't need to see the details of a sexual violence if you're just using it to motivate the male character in a revenge arc. Right?
Yeah, it
feels really exploitative.
Of course.
You could have done 1,000 things to motivate this character.
Yeah.
And even if you needed to use sexual violence to motivate this character for whatever plot reasons later down the road,
right?
There are ways and means of implying that or having that in the story without having to show it. It's lazy.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And so when you said you're bringing funny games, I kind of looked up enough about it. I saw the words home invasion and I was like, oh no.
I knew that this was going to be reaction.
We're going to have a sad episode where you explain something that you enjoy just because you enjoy it and it tickles you in a particular way.
Right.
And I went down the route of like, why? Why would Ben be tickled by this and not me? And I've got some stuff about that later.
Yeah.
And then I watched the movie and it's not that at all.
It's not.
It's, in fact, the exact opposite. The incredible violence and the emotionally disturbing, viscerally upsetting visuals are all cut away from.
Yeah.
And in terms of what actually happens to the family, there's an awful lot of threat.
There is.
Very little actually gets done. And what does get done, and this is going to sound insane, is a normal amount of horror.
Yeah.
It's not the sort of thing that you would read about and go, that's monstrous, that's filmic.
Exactly.
It's a man gets his leg broken, a child is shot, and a woman is drowned.
Yeah.
Those are all, when I say them, you go, oh, okay, that's what happens. Yeah. It's not like Terrifier.
No,
right?
No. There's Do you know what I mean? No glorious gore.
It's not that like celebration of the perverse.
Yeah.
What it is instead is it's a regular mundane violence that you can imagine happening in the world and a real magnifying glass on the terrifying and visceral psychological damage that that causes alone without having to get fictional about the amount of violence you're causing. And I adored it.
So I'm so fucking happy. It's almost like I know what type of movie you're into, right? And I was like, I'm going to bring a horror. Yeah. And you were like, fuck off, because I can't be arsed with it. And I was like, look, just give me a chance on this one.
Yeah, right?
And I went and I found something where I was like, this is going to be it. This is going to be one.
Because
the fact that you just said mundane really fucking tickles my pickle, because I have a whole point on this. It kind of feeds into my exact end point.
Right.
That word specifically. And this is why we work.
Right, it is why we work. Yeah. And I think what I was surprised by is I don't watch a lot of the genre.
Okay.
Because I feel like I just said, the amount of visceral disturbance I'm going to feel is not going to have any artistic merit or value.
Right.
This absolutely does.
Yeah.
It causes that reaction, but it needs to in order to make its point. And 100%. The point is an interesting one.
Yeah, yeah.
How about you, babe? Because I know this is probably not the most extreme film you've ever watched.
No, 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 not by a long shot.
No.
This is the only reason I wanted to talk about this film is because it's a film that's lived with me since 2007.
Right.
So back in those days, I was working at the Odeon, college student. You know what I mean? Doing the whole sort of, I'm finding out that I really like horror now.
Yeah.
So this thing comes out where it's like, it's a horror movie. It's in the cinema. It's going to be fun. I was like, fucking yeah, man, sign me up. I watched it, walked out of the cinema, didn't understand it, thought it was a bag of shite, and was like, I don't get the point. I think I've missed something.
It seems really kind of just cruel, and then it ends.
It was cruel, but it wasn't cruel in a gratifying way, and I was like, this isn't for me. Maybe this is more of like a thinker's thing.
And it's not so cruel that you can revel in extremity.
Exactly. Right, so I was like, it's fine. It's you know, sort of bog standard home invasion movie. They break the fourth wall. It's a bit weird, but that's it. That's what I took from it. That's what young Ben took from it.
Yeah.
And anyway, about 10 years later, I bought a collection of DVDs. Mm-hmm. You know, like I do this periodically where I go through a phase on Facebook Marketplace where I buy people's entire filmographies for no fucking reason. It's just essentially people are moving like tenner for 1,000 DVDs. And I'm like, I'll take 400 Disney DVDs. Sure, why not?
At the end of the day, you're getting 1,000 films for a tenner, which is far better value than Netflix.
That's what I'm saying. Right? You know, I could literally, back then, I could have opened my own Netflix and I still wouldn't have finished watching the films. Yeah. It was stupid. So I went through this phase and Funny Games was in there. I rewatched it, and under like a new guise, I was like, "Ooh, that's hit me in an odd one."
Yeah,
that's hit me in an odd one. I didn't care enough to look into it. It just hit me in an odd one. I was like, "Yeah, that's fine." I watched it again recently and was like, "Fuck me, this is like one of the this is the film."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? This is the one that's going to bridge the gap. You're always saying about horror films, it has to be a good film first, and it has to be a genuinely scary film, or it has to have like an objective that it completes.
Yes,
right.
Yeah. It has to set out its stall and say, "This is what I'm going to do."
Exactly.
And I have to go, there's a reason for that.
Exactly. And since doing this podcast and me trying to understand this more and more, I watched it. I don't know, like a month or so ago, maybe a few weeks ago. And I was like, this is it. This is the one. This is where I'm at. This is what I've needed. So I brought it in. I've done a little bit of research and I've got I've got a few theories. I've got a bit of conjecture corner. I've got what it really means.
Mm-hmm.
I've got I think I've got it. So first question that I already have an answer to.
But I don't even know the question.
I know.
So yeah, this is great because you're asking me a question I've not heard before.
Oh, yeah.
And you're then going to sweep in and go, well, I've been thinking about it for 4 weeks.
Well,
so allow me to make your top of your head. Yeah. Great.
So this is why we work. This is why we work.
Yeah. So the question that you've had weeks to prepare for and I'm going to hear first off, we're both going to have a fair crack at answering it from an even playing field.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
What happens when the antagonists know that they're in a horror movie?
When the baddies know that what they're there to do.
When the baddies are so self-aware that they don't care what's going on in front of them because they're aware it's not real. It's a false universe that they're operating in. They're communicating with us directly going,
yeah.
You ready for this? Are you ready for this? They give us the little winks, the little nods. So this is like pure conjecture corner, right?
Okay.
But I've got a little theory. We've got two psychopaths, Peter and Paul, or Tom and Jerry, because they switch their names constantly.
All the time, and I was really confused by it.
Yeah, yeah.
Until I realized that they were using Tom and Jerry as nicknames, and then I was like, oh, Tom and Jerry, the hyper-violent children's cartoon.
Sure.
Where we all watched and tuned in to see the new and exciting ways that the cartoon characters were going to be violent towards one another.
Exactly.
And then stuff started clicking and I went, oh, Haneke, you're a clever bugger.
Yeah. Or Peter and Paul, because robbing Peter to pay Paul. Also, they're all just made up names. None of it matters because it doesn't, at the end of the day, it doesn't affect the movie that they know that they're in, what they're called. They just call themselves whatever the fuck they want.
It's the apathy of a fictional character.
There you go. They don't care. Doesn't matter. So Peter and Paul, Tom or Jerry, they are two psychopaths. They know they're in the horror movie, right? They know that they have an audience to this home invasion shenanigan movie that they're in. They break the fourth wall, talk to us directly a few times. But the thing that really gets me is they manipulate their reality in the movie, like within the movie world, to play out exactly what they want and what the director wants. And they do it in a way that they do not give a fuck about what's happening to any other character in the movie. Mm-hmm. The only thing they care about is that you're complicit and that you're still watching. I think Michael Haneke is a bit of a genius for this because I think he knows at a certain point in this movie, you've been punished enough that you're mentally going to check out.
Yeah.
And at that moment, the fourth wall breaks and you go, oh,
what's going on?
Okay, I'm back in it.
You sort of get confused and there's a whole new layer.
There's a whole new layer to it.
There's an interesting, I mean, I know this is 2007, but there's an interesting thing that I'm seeing recently in a lot of the media that I'm consuming.
Okay.
Which is, and this is annoying because the only ones that come to mind at the moment aren't films, they're games.
Okay.
So there's a game called Spec Ops The Line, which markets itself very much as like a Call of Duty first person shooter.
Okay.
You go off and do a bunch of war crimes.
Right.
And then the game makes it very apparent that what you're doing is war crimes. And the squad mates that you're working with are like, what are you doing? But of course, as a player, you've just been playing a Call of Duty game.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, "What? You used a flamethrower. What the fuck?"
Right. Okay.
Or like The Last of Us, which at the end of the first Last of Us game, something occurs which the player has to be complicit in.
Yes.
And it gives you that sense of personal responsibility. Now, what Haneke does in this movie is he shows you a lot of awful stuff, but he actually threatens you with far more awful stuff than he delivers.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
So you've got this really visceral sense of wanting it to stop.
Yeah.
But you've got the remote in your hand.
Exactly.
So if you wanted it to stop, make it stop at any point.
I fucking love you for this. Okay, so my theory is that the family are not they're not the real hostages. We are. The viewer is. We're held captive
by our own
nearly
need.
2 hours.
Mm.
We're subjected to whatever evil shit Peter and Paul want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever shit Michael Haneke wants us to see. And we are in full control of it. And it's almost like a test of sorts that we continuously keep failing.
Yeah,
because whoever reaches the end of the movie, it's like...
You lose.
You lose. You've lost. That's it.
And it makes... Now you tell me that, it makes a lot more sense, because the bit where the hostage family, you know, the mum takes control of the gun, she shoots one of the aggressors, the antagonists.
She does.
And she wins, and then Michael Pitt's character picks up the television remote and rewinds it.
Yes,
I'm
he does.
Like, that's a really odd...
Odd choice. It's an odd thing.
Until you realise that there's another person in this situation with a remote.
Yeah.
It's you.
That's
but
exactly
I hadn't made that connection until just now. We're being held hostage by our own need for a resolution.
Exactly.
To see what happens at the end.
Exactly.
We're the hostages.
We are the hostages. Dude, they do not give horror fans the satisfaction of seeing any violence on screen.
No.
There's none on screen whatsoever. All the deaths are off screen.
Mm-hmm.
The broken leg is off screen. Even the broken eggs is off screen. We get all the mundane shit. We get the phone dropped in a sink. We get to focus in on the reaction of the victims, and it's almost like
Michael Hennessy, purveyor of fine brandies to the hip hop community.
Mr. Brandy, holding up a mirror and going, "This is you right now."
Yeah,
and you're just sitting there staring at it. What do you think is going to come next? Because this is you right now, and I swear to God. I've watched this film 3 times.
Mm.
I've watched the original twice. I failed every test at every possible level consistently.
Yeah.
There is no wavering in my commitment to punishing myself.
Right. And the people on screen. Because you go, oh God, I really want this to end. It's like End it then.
But this is it.
You end it. Because stop the film.
Exactly. And because we don't end it, essentially, Haneke, Peter and Paul have held up this mirror. They have stripped us naked. We're lying there, vulnerable, exposed, weird.
Now you're making it sexy.
See where I'm going with this? We're forced to ask ourselves these questions like, what am I hoping for here? I am fully at the mercy of two on-screen psychopaths. And I'm complicit in every single thing that they're doing.
Yeah, because I could stop this.
Because I could do this. That is what you get.
Right.
When the antagonists know that they're in a horror movie. Zero forgiveness, zero mercy.
Yeah.
You're the fucking problem.
What's the famous quote? All that evil requires to triumph is good people not hit the stop button.
Exactly. There you go. Good people not pressing pause on the DVD, I think is the exact phrase.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is, yeah. Yeah, no, I had nothing for that. I said the only time I knew I was in a horror movie was when I brought a baddie home and she closed the bedroom door. And I was like, oh, it's gone wrong. It's gone wrong.
When I brought a baddie home?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was as thin a joke as I got.
That's okay.
I had the length of time you were telling me a really good fact. And I was going to use the fact that I was going to use the time in which I was like, okay, this fact isn't that fascinating.
Okay.
To come up with a good punchline.
Yeah.
And I went, baddie. You used the word baddie. And I was like, oh, there's something there.
Okay.
And then I started really getting interested in what you were saying.
Right.
Right up until this point where I just went, I had a baddie once.
Oh, mint. What a way to round out that poignant point. I poured weeks into this, by the way.
Yes, live though, mate. So uneditable.
I've got another question. God,
again, because the first time went so well.
This is more of sort of like a rhetorical one though. So it's a why remake Funny Games only 10 years later? Because the director, Michael Haneke, who wrote and directed the original movie in 1997.
Yeah.
It was a German film released in Europe. Obviously, he intended it to be seen by a lot more people, but because of like budget restraints and production constraints, it was Austrian, German, released into the world as is.
Right, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't seen by enough people in his books, which is understandable because I didn't see it until I started researching for this one.
Yep.
The message that the film sends and the sort of the point that it's making needed to be heard by more people.
Right.
It needed to be like spread out a little bit more. Michael Haneke's commenting on how fucked up it is that we want this violent shit and then he takes his movie to such an extreme while still keeping it all off screen.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is one of the most evil films I've ever seen. Twice. Right?
Okay.
And he knows what he's doing.
There's more evil films exist, but you've only seen them once.
I don't think there is. Like, I can't...
Really?
Dude, the level of sadistic in this movie...
Right.
...is rarely matched in
other
thrillers.
So, having not seen any of the Terrifier movies, because it seems to me...
That's very different.
Right, how?
Okay, because they are sadistic, but they're glorifying and celebrating the gore.
Right.
So it's a different approach to the sadism. It's a you get the instant gratification from seeing the stuff play out on screen. You very much know that
you're...
And
it's kind of... I get the idea, and again, this is an uninformed opinion, so I'm kind of bringing it forward so that you can correct it.
Yeah.
For me as much as the listeners. But the impression I've got from the Terrifier movies is it's a kind of far darker Tom and Jerry. It's a kind of Tom and Jerry taken to an adult extreme where it's like, and then he's going to get an anvil and he's going to crush the person with the anvil, kind of like it's the celebration and the kind of comedic catharsis of violence.
There's a lot of that in there, but it's not that goofy. Like, it is still quite sadistic and it's very brutal to watch. The second Terrifier has a scene in it that still fucks me up. I've watched it countless times, but it still fucks me up. I know it's coming. I know what happens.
Yeah.
And even still, I'm like, ugh.
And because this is the live show, you'll have to Google it.
Yeah. I'm not going into it because it's going to freak me out. I'll get weird for the rest of it. But the thing is you're very much aware that you're on the outside looking in.
Yeah.
Whereas this film, you're in it. And I hate that.
Yeah.
That's the bit that makes it like...
This is much more reality adjacent. We're not in a fantasy world.
No.
There's no dragons. There's no ghosts. There's no demons. There's no magical men that are defeated by fridges.
Yeah.
These are two normal human beings.
Well, I mean, that's a stretch.
Who have entered into a house.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
And are just doing as they please with the power that they have found.
But the worst thing is they know that you're there.
Yeah.
And they know where you're up to in the movie. So you're just with them at every fucking stand. It doesn't matter how many times you watch it, it still hits you exactly the same. I hate it.
Yeah.
I'm too involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like I've gone to an improv night and they're calling on me to give them words. I don't want to. I don't want to be here in the first place. I came here because I was
pressured. They pulled you up on stage and they're asking you to improv with them.
Someone's put their arms in my sleeves and are doing funny arms and I don't like it. I don't want to do it. So in 1997,
I'll scratch off my list for Pride, Prejudice and Zombies Nightmare.
Yeah, so Haneke knows what we want. He denies it, but only after the fact that it happens. He denies a scene. Like you've just mentioned that the rewind scene, we denied that as well, right? It's a really fucking harsh, sobering view on how we consume this sort of like pornographic violence on screen.
It feels like an art house director has said that we've pissed on the carpet and is currently rubbing our face in the piss going, bad dog, bad dog.
Yeah. It's like a parent has caught you smoking a cigarette, so has bought you 40 and is making you smoke all of them back to back to back to back. Yeah, it's like, you want to smoke cigarettes, do you? Do you want to look cool, do you? Well, here's 40 Marlboro Reds. Enjoy throat cancer. Do you know what I mean? That's what it is. So in 1997, the relatively small number of people, I mean, I say small number of people, like
couple of hundred thousand,
compared to who have seen the remake, the American remake. The small amount of people who saw it, they were left with this lesson and a stark look at like how we consume media.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Michael Haneke has said directly in interviews, and this is a quote from him, I was asked to remake it. Chris Cohen asked me in Cannes whether I would like to do it. The first version of the film, unfortunately, didn't get seen by its intended audience because it was in German. So I thought this would be a good opportunity for it to reach the audience it was originally made for. That is the only reason. And he says this in multiple interviews, and he ends that sentence the exact same way.
Does he mean Americans?
What did I say?
The audience it's intended for. But he's remade it into American.
It's more sort of countries that are big consumers of horror.
Right, yeah.
So America,
UK.
Europe's a big thing.
Yeah.
But obviously foreign films in the UK and America aren't massively consumed.
No, they are a thing that are a niche interest that some people enjoy just passively and they say that's a good film. And other people enjoy so that they can stroke their beard and smoke from a cigarette holder and claim that they've somehow got superior taste.
Oh, have you seen Funny Games? Oh, the 1997 Austrian movie by Michael Haneke. No, the 2007 American one by the same fucking guy.
Yeah. Have you watched Thunderbolts? I'll wait for it to come out on Criterion.
Yeah. Don't say that. Me and my mates have been shopping Criterion loads recently.
Yeah, same.
Fucking love it. But we've got this, right? So he ends every fucking interview when he's talking about this, that is the only reason. As if to sort of put a thing on it to go, don't think about it. Don't look into it anymore. Because if you understand it, you understand it.
Okay.
If you keep watching it, you're missing the point.
Up until now, I've been fully on board with Michael Haneke and his shenanigans.
Hated that, but I loved it at the same time. Tickled me the right way.
But there's a certain point where I go, okay, Mr. Teacher, Mr. fucking High Horse.
Yeah.
You're making it, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's all very well going, well, I thought I'd make this film to highlight the deficiency and the sadism and the barbarism of my customers.
Barbarism?
What? Yeah, like barbarity, but as an adjective.
Barbarism sounds like hairdressers.
Yeah, it does. But it's a little bit like criticizing your customer, right?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. There's your perverse delight, you filth. I'm like, dude, who's putting the money in your pocket?
But it's like
it's all very well delivering the nice lesson, but like you made it, motherfucker.
Yeah, 100%. But it's the same as like so. Say if a but it's the whole meta approach, though, isn't it? It's like when culture gets to a point where we're celebrating the fucking awful.
Yes.
Someone goes to the other extreme and makes something so awful that you are complicit in the awful, and then goes, there you go.
Weirdly, it's one of my main criticisms of Drag Race, RuPaul's Drag Race, which it started...
Too much barbarism.
No. Is that it started out as a satire and a criticism of America's Next Top Model.
Right.
To only then replace it and do exactly what America's Next Top Model was doing.
Right.
It was kind of started as a, isn't this silly that we're pitting humans against one another as a competition in a beauty competition.
Yeah.
And then it lost that satirical edge when it started getting the adulation and is now almost entirely replaced America's Next Top Model in its role in society.
Yeah.
I just think it's an interesting one to point the finger
Yeah, yeah.
And then, but not also point it at yourself. And I'm like, Haneke bud.
Okay.
You're not, it feels a little bit like he's smoking for his cigarette from his cigarette holder with his beret.
Yeah, yeah.
And going, oh, these horror watchers are so barbaric. I will show them the error of their ways.
Kinda.
Right.
Bo Burnham did a bit on talking about lip sync. You know, the TV show in America, lip sync battles, where they get celebrities in, they mime some songs and put on like a goofy little pantomime show thing. He was like, culture's dead. We've done it. Like, we've completed it. We've gone past it. This is the thing. Culture's dead. But it would be if Bo Burnham then went and set up a satirical take of lip sync battles.
Which then became more popular.
Which became so lip sync battle that people were like, okay, this is actually mint.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But what I feel like it is it's the same instinct, and I hate it so much. I know that I'm often accused of being posh or like elitist or this, that, or the other. And one of my big defenses is that I like what I like, and a lot of what I like is on that end of the spectrum. I like paintings and shit like that I understand is a posh thing.
The posh thing is only a joke, though.
I get that. But the thing that annoys me most is Robbie Williams, as an example.
Okay.
Or Kylie Minogue, right? They don't think they're Radiohead.
No.
They're not trying to be Radiohead.
No, of course not.
They go, this is fucking music hall. This is low art. This is entertainment. Yeah. And nothing annoys me more than when like classical musicians talk about pop music, like somehow it's a low art. It's like, it's all just people being entertained, right?
Yeah.
And Haneke is striking me a little bit like a classical composer at this point, going, oh, these pop musicians.
Okay.
Culture is dead. And
I do hear what you're saying.
Now, don't get me wrong. Okay. I love this film and I love Michael Haneke for making it. But I do feel it's a little bit like if we're holding up mirrors, bud.
Yeah. This is the thing where I think he makes us complicit in all of this stuff, but then he makes himself complicit in creating the thing that he's criticizing. Yeah. He's in it with us.
I would need to read an interview where he gets that. Otherwise, I'll be 1,000%. Like, how dare you?
He's not coming from a place of like, I'm better than you. Okay, there's none of that whatsoever. Sorry, I should have expressed it better in my research, which was minimal. The remake itself, to sort of help with this point, Haneke was asked whether he knew it was going to be a shot-for-shot remake. Mm. And at the time, he didn't. I'm going to read a little quote from him now.
Right.
Which talks about why he decided to do a shot-for-shot, almost identical reprint.
Vince Vaughn Psycho.
Of the same thing. Let's not talk about that one. That was fine. So when asked whether he knew or not it would be a shot-for-shot remake, Haneke said, perhaps not immediately, although I'm not sure any longer, but fairly soon, because I think that the film hasn't lost any of its relevance. On the contrary, if anything, it's become more relevant over the last 10 years. Obviously, he did this interview in 2007.
Which, and we were in the midst of like Hostel and Saw and all that kind of stuff, which really were on the torture porn.
Exactly. Yeah. And I didn't see any need to add anything to it. So this is what you were saying. He just took it, like literally took the original film. Everyone missed the point and was like, okay, then I'll translate it to English.
Yeah.
We'll get Naomi Watts in. That was like a key contender for his thing. He was like, if she's not in it, we're not remaking it.
Naomi Watts is a fantastic actress who has made her career as a professional tortured woman.
Yeah. she's incredible.
Like,
she's amazing at
it. If I see Naomi Watts in a film, I'm like, it's a little bit like when you see Justin Long, you know that he's going to be debasing himself for money.
Yeah.
Naomi Watts, you see her and you go, she's going to have a horrible time.
She's just not going to have any fun in this at all. No, yeah, you're 100% right. 100% right. The fact that it's shot for shot as well, the message just gets stronger.
Yeah.
That he's putting in. It's like the first time round,
you didn't get it.
You didn't get it. This time round, you didn't get it. And I fucking love that. And I think we should do it again. But I have a game for this in the moment.
Oh, okay.
In a little while.
Okay. I mean, so the bit of my research that is kind of no longer relevant, but still interesting.
Okay.
Was I was going to do the whole, why do you enjoy this torture porn slop, Ben?
Oh, I like this.
When I, the cultured man who likes art and posh things, like French cinema, do not enjoy this torture porn slop, right?
Sure.
And I found a white paper and they were identifying reasons people watch things. And there's like they've identified three different types of horror watcher.
Okay.
And I don't know which one I am. I don't know which one you are. I've kind of left this as a black box.
Yeah.
But listener, we would be curious to find out what kind you are as well. We've got a chat room on Discord. You'll find the link for it in the episode information.
Yeah.
Wherever you clicked play, there's a little box of text there. There should be a hyperlink. Get involved, get on Discord, and let us know what kind of horror watcher you are. Because one group has been dubbed Adrenaline Junkies.
Ooh, okay.
And they are the sensation seekers who want new and intense experience and are more likely to get a rush from watching violence.
Okay.
Part and only part of this group may be people who like seeing others suffer, / sadists.
Okay.
Which, hey, they're a group.
Sure, they're there.
You meet them from time to time. They close the bedroom door. You're like, oh, I'm in a horror movie. Another group enjoys watching violence because they feel they learn something from it.
Interesting.
These are called the white knucklers. I mean, this is what this group of scientists have called them.
Sure. Right?
These aren't widespread terms. This is what the group of scientists that did the study termed them.
I love this.
But they're a little bit like adrenaline junkies. They feel intense emotions from watching horror, but they dislike the emotions. They tolerate them because they feel it helps them learn something about how to survive.
Interesting.
Now, almost every woman I know who likes true crime.
Yeah.
And I've been like, why are you eating your cereal with, as the joke goes, you know, her legs were cut off, her arms were cut off, her ears were cut off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you're like, dude, I'm having my marshmallow mateys. I'm like, why? What?
Fucking love marshmallow mateys.
Right. But that every single woman I've asked that, they've been like, it's research.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's to make sure I can get the bus
home
from work.
100%.
And I'm like, oh, 100%. Yeah, that makes sense. Then there's a third group called the Dark Copers.
Interesting.
Right? They seem to get both sets of benefits. They enjoy the sensations generated by watching the violence and feel they can learn something.
Interesting. Okay. So you've got sort of like pleasure watchers.
Yeah, I like seeing the extremity of the violence.
Then you've got...
And I'm like, wow, this is so... This like, I feel like people who watch a Serbian film or do The Disturbing Iceberg.
Right.
They're the sadists, like, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the other people who watch that stuff are there because they're like, no, this is learning.
Yeah.
And then there's the people who watch it more for kind of a bit of both, the dark copers.
Where would you put you in that?
I'm definitely in the second one. I'm definitely in the white knuckle. I'm not watching it because I want to learn how to survive a machete attack.
Right.
What I'm interested in is learning how to deal with the trauma that comes after a machete attack.
Right.
Which is why I loved this film. Some of my favorite fiction, there's a book called Anna Karenina by Tolstoy, and it's a book where massive consequences happen from like tiny social interactions. So there's a woman who hasn't physically cheated on her husband, but it was an arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Neither of them really love each other, but he's an intensely possessive man.
Right.
And then there's a guy that she has always loved, who's racing a horse. He falls off his horse. She stands up. She's like petrified.
Okay.
And her husband clocks it. And he's like, oh.
Okay.
You shouldn't be that concerned about a stranger.
Oh my God.
Because of that one thing, everything collapses. Like
Do you have this book?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I borrow this?
Yeah,
because I have a film for you.
Oh, okay.
It's called Babel.
Oh,
I don't know if you've seen it, but it's four separate stories from different parts of the world.
Ooh.
Brad Pitt's in it. And it is...
I think I have seen it and it's incredible.
It's one of the best films I've ever seen in my entire life.
Like, okay, yeah.
It's insane how there's one sort of like incident.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
And it affects eight people.
I remember watching it when it came out. I remember being blown away by it.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those films that I'm always trying to remember what it is.
Babel.
Amazing.
We'll do it soon because I'm desperate to rewatch that.
Bringing it back to film, Park Chan-wook, all of his films, the Revenge Trilogy,
of course,
are all tiny events
that
spiral out into huge...
I mean, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance?
Yeah.
That's kind of a big event.
That's okay. It's a big event initially that falls apart because of tiny things.
Okay.
He takes her to the river
to
play.
Oh my God, you're so right.
It starts with a big inciting incident. Old Boy starts with... one sentence as he's leaving a school to his mate. Lady Vengeance starts with her picking the wrong teacher to ask for help.
Jesus Christ.
All these tiny things with massive consequences.
Yeah.
And the fiction I hate is the one where massive things happen with no consequences.
Oh, yeah.
Moon Crash, The Gorge, Fast and Furious. You know, you've all just been through a near apocalyptic event and your trousers are dry. That's not human.
I'm sorry, you're talking about Moonfall.
Moon Crash, sorry.
Moon Crash.
What's the film with
Moonfall?
Moonfall, yeah.
one of the greatest films of our generation.
It is, for all the wrong reasons. It yeah. is. So I put myself in a white knuckler. I like the learning, mm-hmm. but I like the learning of how people react and how to be a help.
I like that.
Like, this person's just okay. been chased by a machete monster.
Yeah, yeah.
What do they need? How okay. can I help them with that?
Oh, that's
that?
Really nice. So yours is like an outward thing.
Yeah, I'm like how can that. I help people with stuff they've been through?
I really like that.
Let's watch some people go through some stuff and maybe I'll get some stuff from it.
That's nice, okay.
You're like, I like chainsaws through people's faces.
Show me the knife. No.
Like Tom Cruise down a phone.
Yeah. No. I think I'm going to put myself in the third group.
The Dark Coper.
The Dark Coper.
Such an edgelord. You heard the title and you were like, that's me.
Honestly, I'm that's like, me. I'm one good cape away from being a necromancer. I'm going to put myself in the third group because I like watching horror films because of the suspended disbelief, mm-hmm. right? I feel like there's a lot of universes where the rules are like fast and loose, mm-hmm. which I quite enjoy. But then I also use it for seeing how people go through these horrific events and then carry on living. And it's sort of like, I go through stuff that I struggle with that is in no way, shape or form anywhere near as bad as, objectively, as bad as any of these people go through. And they carry on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They crack on.
That's
they do their
true.
Thing.
There's optimism there.
It's nice to see people go through worse shit than me and go, that's fine, mate. And I'm like, you know what? It kind of is fine, mate. Yeah, cheers
yeah.
for that.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like, I don't know. I think it comes from childhood. My brother showed me horror movies when I was way too young. My dad had left. So then when something bad happened, I'd just be like, well, Sigourney Weaver was fine. You know what I mean?
She was she all right. She went back for the cat.
She was all right. She was fine. Yeah. I think it's that. I think that's why I watch. I like to do the whole cathartic.
He's a dark
processing.
Coper.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. I like it.
Well, what a nice little journey we've been on here. I feel like we know each other a little better. I feel like I know myself a little better.
There we go.
This is nice.
Thanks, Michael Haneke, for your horrific two-hour ordeal.
This is what I mean. Look at what he's done. He's bringing people together. He's bringing the necromancers and the white knucklers. Boosh. Building bridges.
Does that sound like the groups from the Warriors?
That would 1,000% be my name.
Yeah, it would be.
That's the gang name.
You'd be the necromancers. You'd be the white knucklers.
Yeah, that would be it. You just stand there shaking your fist furiously and I stand there going...
Doing coke off the back of my hand.
I've got one final question.
Ooh.
Before we get to like the game / not game.
Okay.
What's it really mean?
Well, I think we've covered what it really means.
Yeah.
It's the you could stop this anytime you like, you pervert.
Yeah. It's that. I think it's a criticism on cyclical violence and remakes themselves.
Okay.
And I quite enjoy the way that he's done it with his own work rather than outsourcing it. He's gone, no, I'll lead by example.
Mm-hmm.
I'll show you what I mean by pouring 10 years into one long joke.
Yeah. I mean, the cast in this, I think he was very... I've not seen the original.
Yeah.
Which I was desperate to watch it. We ran out of time. We're releasing this episode in 1 hour. I didn't have time to watch it. But I don't think watching the original, I'm going to bond with it because I've bonded so heavily with this cast. I'm a massive fan of Michael Pitt, who plays Peter.
Mm-hmm.
People will know him. No one has seen my favorite film, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, but he's brilliant in that. You have. We're two people out of maybe 1,000.
We watched the cast reunion on YouTube.
It was amazing.
The live stream that was pre-recorded, and we were furious.
Yeah, we were. Yeah. Because we waited for that for a while.
We were on YouTube for about 2.5 hours watching
waiting
the countdown.
For it to start, yeah.
Yeah.
He was also in Boardwalk Empire. He played Jimmy Darmody.
He did.
I watched all of Boardwalk Empire with my mum.
Mm-hmm.
Really bonded with the Jimmy Darmody character.
Okay.
Found it difficult watching Boardwalk Empire with my mum.
Yeah.
As Jimmy Darmody repeatedly had intimate sex scenes with his mum.
Yeah, that's
but
a
Michael
rough one.
Pitt always does great, interesting, chewy,
he does.
Complex characters.
Yeah.
Like a really sympathetic prohibition hero who shags his mum, or a little twink who steals all the songs of a trans person.
Yeah.
The other person who plays Paul.
Yes.
He is somebody else you might know.
The one who plays Paul?
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen him in much, to be honest.
No, you might not have seen him, but you'll definitely have heard of his work.
Okay.
Because something he worked on was nominated for 10 Oscars in 2025.
Is this Brady Corbett?
Brady Corbett.
Okay.
Who plays Paul.
Yeah.
And wrote, directed, and produced The Brutalist with Adrian Brody.
The Brutalist?
Yeah. That's his film.
The three and a half hour one about an architect.
The 7 week long architecture movie.
That has a built in interval.
Yes.
Because it's so long.
That's the brainchild and the love project of the chap with the shotgun in Funny Games.
Tubby.
Of Tubby.
I don't know how to feel about this.
I don't either.
I don't know how to feel about any of this.
No.
I've bonded with him on a level where I'm like, I've accepted that he's a part of my real world now.
Yeah, he's a demon. He's a monster on the earth.
He is the monster. He's a real life demon.
Yeah.
In a horror movie that knows he's in a horror movie.
Yeah.
Which means he knows he's an actor.
And he's also, he's got that, this whole film has got that No Country for Old Men, the unreasonable dedication of evil. Like, it's evil, it's happening, there is no reason for it, it will not be reasoned with, it will not be rational. So to find out he got his picture got nominated for 10 Oscars and won 3.
Fucking hell.
And he's now like a darling of Hollywood. I'm like, ooh.
I don't think I like this. I feel like the actor, the real life demon actor, got a taste for Hollywood and how evil that side of stuff is, and then started doing it on his own. And now I'm concerned. That's bled over. Yeah, I don't like this. I feel weird.
But I feel like the American cast, to bring back to my earlier point about the remake, I feel like Haneke knocked it out of the park.
1,000%.
Because I wouldn't have watched the original. I watched this.
Exactly.
Right?
And I'm in the same boat as you.
I'm so glad I watched it.
I'm so fucking happy, man. Because we've got the original story being cyclical violence conducted by Peter and Paul, right? Going house to house, brutally torturing and killing wealthy families that are just there for a vacation. They're just on holiday. Come on, kids, what are we doing? Let's go to the lake.
Yeah.
You want some eggs? Yeah, I can get you some eggs. Don't worry about it, mate.
Yeah.
We join them at a tail end of one family's demise.
Mm-hmm.
We witness the entire ordeal mm-hmm. of another family's demise. And then we witness them begin again.
Yeah.
The start of a third family's demise.
Yeah.
Just because.
Just because.
Just because, right? So it's a non-stop violent cycle.
Yeah.
Then we have a remake, a shot-for-shot remake.
Yeah.
With slightly updated, modernized, and like Americanized values. Like, that's the whole thing. In the original, there's a few differences. Obviously, they didn't know the number for the police because back in 1997, it wasn't a big thing. But then post 9/11 America, every single person's going to know 9/11.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the original, the dad phones his mate because he doesn't know the number for the police.
Right.
Whereas in this one, they can't do that. They have to keep phoning 999, but the signal's an issue.
Yeah.
Or the phone got dropped into a sink. Do you know what I mean? They had to update certain little values. We join it with a new cast and crew.
Yep.
They are impersonating the original cast and crew.
Yep.
Much like how plays are like recast and then they do reruns and stuff 100%. Like this. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it offers an almost perfect counterexample to the discourse shown to foreign film remakes. Because obviously when everyone mentions the American remake of Old Boy,
Ring.
Or The Ring, or The Grudge, or all this shit, it's sort of like, ugh, kind of, it just gets sour. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
But by remaking Funny Games 10 years later, Haneke is furthering his point with the cyclical nature of violence, but he's also commenting on the cyclical nature of remakes. And for that, this film has fucking floored me on a level I didn't understand when I watched it back in 2007.
Yeah.
When I watched it again, maybe a decade later.
Proper good film that would be good without the horror, but needs the horror to make the point it's making.
Exactly. Everything is there for a reason. Yep. Everything is executed perfectly, and nothing... And I mean, nothing is gratuitous.
Yeah.
You are complicit in all of this. You're in control in your involvement. And for a filmmaker to put that control in your hands is insane to me.
I'd say this is probably now my number one horror film if we're talking human horror. So not supernatural, not demons or ghosts or
thriller,
magic.
Like realistic thriller, home invasion.
Slasher. This is number one.
Okay.
Because this is saying something artistically relevant about what it is.
Incredible.
And about the genre and about people.
Okay.
Which, with all due respect, and I understand the love for them, the sort of 80s pantheon of Freddie, Michael, these guys.
Jason, missing out the most important, but that's fine.
He's from Chucky, right?
I fucking hate you. End the show.
they don't have that. They're a different beast.
Right.
And it's just a beast that doesn't link with me.
Yeah.
But speaking of remakes, and you might hate this.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some ideas for a recast.
This is the game.
Oh, right, okay.
Well, it's not a game, but it's kind of a game.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say we need another remake. We should remake this film every 10 years until people get the message that it's trying to say.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
My game is, who would you cast?
I'm really glad that I prepped this remake? Because I've got the best cast for this.
Okay.
But it took me a bit of thinking, and if I hadn't, on my own evolutionary journey to this episode, prepped this,
yeah,
I wouldn't have got here.
Okay.
So bear with me. This film is about... okay. This film is about cycles.
Yeah.
It's about culture. It's about violence. It's a very worthy thing.
So you're thinking like famous cyclist, sort of like maybe
Lance
athlete.
Armstrong.
Michael Phelps.
No, so the Invaders.
But he's a swimmer.
The Invaders. You're going to like this.
Go on.
The Rock and Jack Black.
Fuck.
The dad.
Hold on.
Pedro Pascal.
Okay.
The mum. Gal Gadot. The kid. Kevin Hart.
So you want to just put Gal Gadot in Jumanji and then run with that?
So it's all the overcast actors,
right,
who are in every bit of Hollywood slop.
Right.
Like Red One.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Jumanji 9.
Yeah.
Or Snow White.
Sure.
Or Minecraft.
Got you.
Or Borderlands.
Yeah. Or right. Die Hard.
Right, exactly. But shot for shot.
Yeah.
Remake of Funny Games.
Okay.
Not a change in the script.
Okay.
It's these actors doing this film about the cyclical nature of remakes and the horror that we are forced to watch.
That would be such a meta take.
Done at the hands of the very people who have been in those films.
I love this.
I want to see The Rock and Jack Black do their sinister home invasion.
All I've got in the back of my head is just Jack Black stood at the door being sort of like, would you mind if we borrowed some eggs? Chicken jockey!
Yeah.
And it's bringing me out of it.
Yeah, right.
It's bringing me out of it.
I feel
I'm here for it, because obviously seeing the sinister bit, everyone's going to be expecting the chicken jockey, but no.
I feel like maybe the only person I'm not sure about is Jack Black as the invader because of the chicken jockey thing.
Got you.
Maybe put him as the dad and have Pedro Pascal and The Rock, because The Rock is one of those wholesome actors that I know for a fact is wholesome by virtue of the fact that they are a dark person who's got bodies under the house.
Yeah.
Nobody is that charitable and that nice all the time without having to be that way for a reason. Like you always say, Bono brings a priest on tour.
Yeah.
You shouldn't need to have to bring a priest with you everywhere.
Yeah, you don't. Right? You shouldn't have to have a priest with you to keep you on the straight and narrow.
Right.
If you have a risk of fucking other women, then bring your wife.
Right. I feel like bringing a priest on tour, you're just outsourcing the Vatican recruitment process 100%. For the sex dungeon.
You look after my morality, so I don't have to.
Right. So I feel like the kind of realm of the ultra virtuous.
Okay.
I'd really love to see like Tom Cruise as one of the home invaders, because you know he would nail it.
Oh, he'd fucking kill it.
And you know The Rock, if The Rock fell off a bit and started needing to actually act,
right,
he could nail this.
I reckon he could as well.
And it would be a wonderful perversion of everything he's done so far. So as funny as it would be to on the face of things, and obviously Kevin Hart as the kid is there as a joke because he's tiny.
That's fucking hilarious.
But I do think there is something in getting some Hollywood A-listers to play against type.
I like that.
How about you?
For the Invaders, I would like the two guys that played Pedro and Napoleon in Napoleon Dynamite.
Okay. So you've gone from kind of like ultra-rich, moneyed young kids to awkward, autistic, hipster 50-year-olds.
But I want them to play. I want them to
be. Would
the
they be the
same
age they were in Napoleon Dynamite?
They'd be the age they are
now,
right now,
in their 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what I want. I want them knocking on the door in their tennis whites,
right?
Being nice and polite and weird. But you'd know something was off immediately because you know.
Yeah.
Because of how they look.
Yeah. 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 Because they have visible autism.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd want that. I'd want to replace the dad with Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
because I feel like Brad Pitt could do the whole nicey-nicey, maybe a little bit of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood to begin with, right up until he gets his knee shattered.
Yeah.
And then when he gets his knee shattered, he can like lean into some fucking, you know, some space that we haven't really seen him in yet, which is like weak, pathetic kind of blubbering, please help me.
Yeah.
I'm desperately trying.
I mean, they did that well with Tim Roth in this one, because Tim Roth normally plays nutters.
Does he fuck Reservoir Dogs? He just plays the guy that's had shit done to him immediately. Reservoir Dogs, he's gut shot the entire film.
With the exception of Reservoir Dogs, he usually plays nutters.
I mean, there is a film coming out with him in soon called Tornado. It's a Scottish samurai movie. It looks incredible because he is going to be a nutter in that.
Right, okay.
It looks incredible.
He's just designed to be a nutter.
Yeah, he's built for it. You know when people say I'm built different?
Tim Roth is built different. Yeah, yeah.
He's the only person
I could see playing Francis Begbie better than the original actor.
Yes. Yes, that's a fucking great shout. Let's make that happen. You know what I mean? For the mom, I would want to cast someone that everyone knows and loves and sees as sort of like a strong role model, I guess. So I'd go Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
After the whole Barbie thing and stuff like this.
Oh, I thought you were going to do Wolf of Wall Street, but
No. We saw too much in Wolf of Wall Street.
Right, okay.
You know what I mean?
Did we?
Listeners can't see me winking, but that's fine. That was my fourth wall break.
Okay, like, nice.
But no, I'd go Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
And then for the kid, Macaulay Culkin as he is now.
Okay, yeah. Going on that Home Alone sequel vibe.
You'd get that.
Yeah.
But then you wouldn't.
Okay, fair.
There'd be a point in the movie where you're like, oh, this is why he wasn't in Home Alone 3. Yeah, so Macaulay Culkin as he is now, but it's sort of like more like a family reunion.
You wouldn't go with the superior Culkin?
Kieran. No, I couldn't watch him die. Are you being serious?
He's too good.
He's too precious. He's a national treasure.
He's honestly my favourite.
He's fucking incredible. Have you seen him in interviews?
Yeah.
He's amazing.
He's incredible.
Spirit animal.
Yeah.
I fucking love him. But that's my game. So I think that's what we should do. We need to remake it. We need to recast it. We need to get the point out again. We need to get it done. We got a comment corner?
We got a few. So we recently covered Judge Dredd.
We did.
And one of the reels that we put up there was about the fact that Judge Dredd has a gun into which he speaks the ammunition that he wants to fire.
Yeah.
And we had a good response of people getting in touch saying what they would want their gun to fire.
Okay, yeah.
And some of them are absolutely just...
I've not read any of these, so if you can read them out to me.
Wasps.
That's a fucking great one for a start.
Isn't that?
That would be terrifying.
Restless leg syndrome.
Cunt.
Right.
Now my leg feels weird.
Right.
Straight away.
Right. Most of them were on TikTok.
Okay.
Bear with me. Medic shoots you with health.
Oh, okay. A positive one. That's good.
Right. I quite like that.
Yeah.
Tinnitus.
Cunt. Because now my ear feels weird. Yeah. I hate this. Wasps was fun.
Itch in the arch of the foot. I've got one now.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
I hate this.
Colonoscopy round, caliber magnum.
Caliber magnum.
Yeah.
It's just a massive colonoscopy immediately.
Fucking hell,
that's amazing.
Push this button. Gender dysmorphia.
Wow. Wow. Fucking hell, that one got real.
Didn't it? Yeah. So there were loads.
Okay.
We can't read them all. We're very, very short on time.
I've seen one
that
just said cum shot.
Yeah, I was going to skip that one. But
I've seen one that popped up as a notification on my phone whilst I was at work. I work at a cinema. It was in the morning and we were screening the fucking Peppa Pig movie. I'm scanning tickets on my phone and something pops up on TikTok just saying, cum shot. I'm like, yeah, mint. Are you looking forward to Peppa Pig?
Do any of these fuckers ever jump out of the wall? Just yell. Right. Oh, no, wait. What are you rating Funny Games 2007?
Mate, it has to be a fat 10.
Fat 10.
Has to be.
Fat 10's all round.
Has to be a fat 10. Because it does what it does so fucking well. And what it does is so unsettling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in terms of enjoyment.
Yeah.
It's not a 10.
No, no, no.
You
God,
will not
no.
enjoy this. This isn't The Last Starfighter. This isn't Tammy and the T-Rex.
This isn't a don't fun
put
film.
This, don't put this on for a good time.
No.
Put this on for a fascinating time.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I would put this on for... If you're in good health and you're in a good space mentally...
And you're not about to go on holiday to a lake house.
I would recommend this film.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would
yeah.
also use doesthedogdie.com and then it'll give you an exact pinpoint to skip.
Yes.
Which I would recommend because yes. I think in 2000...
Although, again, you see nothing because Michael Haneke is a dark genius.
I mean, you say you see nothing. There's you don't see the act, but you see the fallout of the act,
yeah.
which is what the whole film is about. You just see the ramifications of the horror. You see the consequences. Mm. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And that's what's fucked.
Yeah.
Well, that's
also,
it.
Get tickets for our live show.
Get tickets for the live show. They go on sale on Wednesday. The film festival is happening at the Wellington Orbit in Telford. It's part of a rural remix name. That's such an awkward name to say. Rural remix thing. There's four independent cinemas in Shropshire all getting together. We're all doing like a fun little thing. We've got four different movies playing.
Town for VHS. VHS will be there.
We've got a live show that we'll be recording, a quiz. I'm working on this special guest. I can't talk about it until he said yes.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's a fun, fun, interesting special guest.
There'll be
guest.
Audience participation. You can be in an episode if you shout loud enough.
Exactly.
God, no, that's going to be like the mime in
no,
the
no,
Tim
no,
Robinson.
I'm coming around. I'm asking you all questions. I'm asking you questions directly.
Right.
You want to have your input in an episode?
Let's wait until you're we've got it. Wireless mics first before we promise
no,
that.
No, 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 I'm promising
just
it
long
right
cable.
Now. Really long cable.
Right, okay. Fine, 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 fine. Unfortunately, that is the end of the show. We will hopefully see you at the live show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. We love you all dearly. Thank you very much for hanging out with us. And
we
thank
really
you for
do.
The support. It really means the fucking world.
Now go tell your fucking mates. Tell your friends. Be like, oi, listen, you ever seen Funny Games? Don't watch it. Also, here's an episode for you. Get him in. It's a good
ben
time.
Ben is now going to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week. We know a lot of you listen on a Monday. By wrapping up the themes, thoughts, and emotions of Funny Games 2007 into a motivational Monday pep talk.
Yeah.
While I just tell you to consume.
There's a really poignant life lesson in this movie, and that is when the mom, Anna, when she opens the door to these polite young men, oh, you're after some eggs, do come in, that's all fine. This. The lesson is, don't fucking answer your door. Someone, if a stranger is at your door, what's it going to be? Is it going to be good? It's probably not. Not judging by this one. What, you got Jovo's knocking on? You ever seen... Oh, all right, mate. You ever seen this book?